It is Tuesday, September 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Barack Obama speaks to the United Nations General Assembly for the last time as president.
Despite enormous progress, as people lose trust in institutions, governing becomes more difficult, and tensions between nations become more quick to surface.
The presidential candidates comment on the New York City bombing, and singer will.i.am issues a new and updated version of the song, Where's the Love? It's all ahead. In his final address to the UN General Assembly, President Barack Obama spoke about a range of issues facing the world, which his administration dealt with.
From the depths of the greatest financial crisis of our time, we coordinated our response to avoid further catastrophe and return the global economy to growth. We've taken away terrorist safe havens, strengthened the non-proliferation regime, resolved the Iranian nuclear issue through diplomacy. We opened relations with Cuba, helped Colombia and end Latin America's longest war. And we welcome a democratically elected leader of Myanmar to this assembly. Our assistance is helping people feed themselves, care for the sick, power communities across Africa, and promote models of development rather than dependence. And we have made international institutions like the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund more representative, while establishing a framework to protect our planet from the ravages of climate change. This is important work. It has made a real difference in the lives of our people. And it could not have happened had we not worked together. And yet, around the globe, we are seeing the same forces of global integration that have made us interdependent also expose deep fault lines in the existing international order. We see it in the headlines every day. Around the world, refugees flow across borders in flight from brutal conflict. Financial disruptions continue to weigh upon our workers and entire communities. Across vast swaths of the Middle East, basic security, basic order has broken down. We see too many governments muzzling journalists and quashing dissent and censoring the flow of information. Terrorist networks use social media to prey upon the minds of our youth, endangering open societies and spurring anger against innocent immigrants and Muslims. Powerful nations contest the constraints placed on them by international law. And this is the paradox that defines our world today. A quarter century after the end of the Cold War, the world is by many measures less violent and more prosperous than ever before. And yet our societies are filled with uncertainty and unease and strife. Despite enormous progress, as people lose trust in institutions, governing becomes more difficult, and tensions between nations become more quick to surface. And so I believe that at this moment, we all face a choice. We can choose to press forward with a better model of cooperation and integration, or we can retreat into a world sharply divided and ultimately in conflict, along age-old lines of nation and tribe and race and religion. I want to suggest to you today that We must go forward and not backward. I believe that as imperfect as they are, the principles of open markets and accountable governance, of democracy and human rights and international law that we have forged remain the firmest foundation for human progress in this century. I make this argument not based on theory or ideology, but on facts. Facts that all too often we forget in the immediacy of current events. Here's the most important fact. The integration of our global economy has made life better for billions of men, women, and children. Over the last 25 years, the number of people living in extreme poverty has been cut from nearly 40% of humanity to under 10%. That's unprecedented. And it's not an abstraction. It means children have enough to eat. Mothers don't die in childbirth. Meanwhile, cracking the genetic code promises to cure diseases that have plagued us for centuries. The internet can deliver the entirety of human knowledge to a young girl in a remote village on a single handheld device. In medicine and in manufacturing and education and communications, we're experiencing a transformation of how human beings live on a scale that recalls the revolutions in agriculture and industry. And as a result, a person born today is more likely to be healthy, to live longer, and to have access to opportunity than at any time in human history.
That's President Obama speaking at the UN General Assembly. I'm joined now by VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Beshear. Well, Margaret, President Obama described it was a mixed view of the world, saying there have been improvements and disappointments over the years. But how does he suggest the world come together to work to resolve differences?
Well, I think he wanted to reiterate that message that he first came here with in 2009, which is that we all must cooperate. We need multilateralism. He said we can choose to cooperate and integrate, or we can retreat into a divided world. So I think, you know, he was kind of saying to you, it's one way or the other. Either you're going to work together or you're going to isolate yourselves. And that was sort of a theme he brought when he first came here 8 years ago.
And how was his message received by the General Assembly?
He didn't get a standing ovation. He got the standard applause at the end. I actually was a little surprised since it was his last speech. I thought he might have more applause or, you know, some sort of a warmer reception. But I think actually it was a pretty standard response.
Well, now, today was also the final speech by Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, at least to the General Assembly.
Right.
What did he talk about?
Well, boy, he had, some issues to get off his chest. He had some words for some leaders he's been waiting to say for a while. He took aim at quite a few governments and countries. First and foremost, on Syria, he said he referred to the attack yesterday on a UN Syrian Arab Red Crescent aid convoy. He called it sickening and savage. He said it was apparently deliberate, which would make it a war crime if it is proved to be deliberate. He said that, you know, just when we thought things couldn't get any worse in Syria, the bar of depravity sinks lower. And he also spoke about Mr. Assad, saying the fate of the country shouldn't just hinge on one person and that it's time for political transition there. And then he turned to Africa, and he said in South Sudan, leaders have betrayed their people. He talked about this penchant for rewriting constitutions and manipulating elections so people can stay in power, like we're seeing in DRC right now. The UN's very concerned about the recent flare-up in violence there, where Mr. Kabila seems to want to stay in power. And he said, my message is clear. Serve your people. Don't subvert democracy. Do not pilfer your country's resources. And do not imprison and torture your critics. So very strong stuff from Ban Ki-moon. He also made some apologies. He said that he regretted and he was very sorry about the situation of Haiti, of cholera in Haiti after the earthquake 6 years ago. Peacekeepers went to Haiti from Nepal, and a cholera epidemic broke out, and in some studies and some investigations, it has been attributed to these peacekeepers, although the UN hasn't really said it was their fault. But he did say that he deeply regretted it. 9,000 people died from this epidemic. It was really quite a blight on the United Nations. And he also spoke about sexual abuse and exploitation by UN peacekeepers and other troops from foreign countries working with the UN, specifically in, or especially in Africa. We've seen a lot of cases in Central African Republic and Mali, very sad cases where children have been raped and abused by peacekeepers. And he spoke about that as well. So he, you know, gave the pros and the cons of his administration.
All right. Thanks very much, Margaret. That's VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Beshear.
Thanks, Sarah.
And now it's time to look at social media, and I'm joined by editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's going on?
Well, a lot of big names trending in social media today, and we'll start with President Obama speaking for the last time at the UN General Assembly. And he had a lot to say about issues ranging from world security to climate change to income inequality. But the one quote that a lot of people are sharing on social media is this one. He said, "Social media has enabled citizens to express themselves freely, and this has raised the standards of what is expected of us in power." So people saying that he's putting a lot of weight behind the power of the people, and particularly with regard to digital and social media, that people can now speak out, hold their leaders accountable. So that was a big moment today at the UN in New York. Another name trending, former President George H.W. Bush, who apparently is going to vote for Hillary Clinton, of course, the wife of Bill Clinton, who beat him in 1992. He says he can't support Donald Trump because he's too radical, so this has kicked off a political firestorm. A lot of Republicans very unhappy with George H.W. Bush, saying he's not showing party loyalty, but a lot of others saying if he can't support the Republican nominee, that shows he's far too radical. Speaking of Donald Trump, his son is trending after he put a comment on social media where he compared Syrian refugees to the Skittles candy. He said, "If you had a bowl of Skittles and had three of them that were poison, would you take a handful?" That's the Syrian refugee crisis. And people saying it's reductive and even offensive for him to be comparing Syrian refugees to candy. But a lot of others, Trump supporters, saying, you know what, this is the point that we need to be making, that these people could be coming in, could be terrorists, and especially in light of the attacks in New York and New Jersey, they're saying we need to be especially careful. And then finally, two names put together that are trending today, Brangelina, of course, because Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie are apparently getting divorced. And this has sent the internet into a frenzy. Lots of people saying if they can't make it, who can? This was the, you know, Hollywood couple, not just in Hollywood, but humanitarians as well. They have a number of children together. And I've also seen a lot of Jennifer Aniston gifts because Jennifer Aniston, of course, was married to Brad Pitt before he left for Angelina Jolie. So a lot of Jennifer Aniston fans are rejoicing at the news, but a lot of talk about this couple.
Quite the soap opera there.
Absolutely, and it's only going to continue, I bet.
Thanks very much, Andrew. That's Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top stories trending. In the International Syria Support Group meets in New York to discuss the Syria civil war. Human Rights Watch says at least 44 people are killed in the Democratic Republic of Congo clashes. 51 U.S. corporations pledge new refugee aid, and topics for the U.S. presidential debate are announced. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Most animals from 8 million years ago either evolved into more modern species or have become extinct. Among the few exceptions is the American alligator, which makes its home in freshwater wetlands from Texas to North Carolina. A new study by scientists at the University of Florida suggests that these dinosaur lookalikes have remained untouched by significant evolutionary change for at least 8 million years. The study also finds that the alligator may be up to 6 million years older than had been thought. While it has remained unchanged for millions of years, the study suggests the American alligator evolved from ancestors that go back some 200 or more million years ago. Researchers call the alligator a survivor since it has endured many changes to its environment, such as wild fluctuation in the Earth's climate and sea level. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. 2 days after a bomb exploded on a New York street and another explosive device were others were found in the city and in New Jersey, a suspect is in custody. Presidential candidates Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton are weighing in. Jeff Swicord reports.
Combating terrorism is an important issue for voters in the presidential election this fall. Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton spoke Monday, reassuring voters that America will prevail while promoting her national security experience.
I'm the only candidate in this race who has been part of the hard decisions to take terrorists off the battlefield. And I've laid out a comprehensive plan to meet the evolving nature of this threat and take the fight to ISIS everywhere they threaten us, including online.
Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump struck a very different tone from earlier in the day. He blamed the bombing in New York on what he called a broken immigration system that allows terrorists to enter the USA.
These attacks and many others were made possible because of our extremely open immigration system, which fails to properly vet and screen the individuals or families coming into our country.
Political historian Matthew Dalek of George Washington University says tying immigration to terrorism may give Trump a talking point, but it may not resonate with the more educated suburban voters he needs to attract to win the election.
The key question is, does it help him expand the electorate enough so that he can win in places like Florida, Pennsylvania, Ohio? He very well may win, at least in some of these places, but I'm not sure that, you know, for example, the majority of the country disagrees with him on immigration.
Dalek says Trump's divisive rhetoric after the terrorist attacks in Orlando, Florida, where 49 people were killed in a gay nightclub, did not help him. He says the public responded more favorably to Hillary Clinton's learned and measured tone, and he predicts that will be the case in the aftermath of the New York bombing.
Hillary Clinton has a long record of understanding the nuances of foreign policy and national security and thinking deeply about many of these issues. She hasn't always been right. It's sort of one of the hazards of having been in public office for so long, but clearly there's no, in terms of their level of experience and their achievements, there is no comparison.
The remarks from both candidates come as investigators are still searching for a motive to the bombing. Officials do not believe the suspect, 28-year-old Ahmad Khan Rahami, a U.S. citizen who was born in Afghanistan, was a part of a larger network. Jeff Swicord, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me now to tell us about an old song that's been given a new and timely update.
Well, the subject today is a song with a social message, and it's an old song given a new spin. The song is called Where Is the Love? You may know the Black Eyed Peas from the many, many hits they had about 10, 15 years ago. Well, will.i.am is back, and he's assembled quite a cast of other artists, not only musicians, but also actors and actresses, to join in a song that is very timely. In fact, will.i.am, who is the founder of the Black Eyed Peas and the guy who's producing this song, said that I thought about Paris and the terrorist attacks in Paris. And I thought to myself, we need Where Is the Love? He said, and then came Belgium, Turkey, Orlando, Dallas. He said, so I decided it was time to bring this song back. Originally a big hit for the Black Eyed Peas in 2003. Now we have the 2016 version of Where Is the Love, which has not only incorporated the original members of the Black Eyed Peas, Taboo, Ap-Ta-Ap, Fergie, and will.i.am, but has also included Justin Timberlake, Jamie Foxx, P. Diddy, Mary J. Blige, Nicole Scherzinger, Usher, and quite a few famous actors and sports figures like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Rosario Dawson, and the list goes on and on. And all of these celebrities have joined in for the video. The song is available as a download only, and all the profits and money raised by the sale of this particular song will be going to will.i.am's nonprofit foundation called Angel, which is helping children with educational programs around the world.
It sounds like an all-star production.
It is a great production, and I think we should listen to it.
Where is the love?
People killing, people dying. Children hurting, I hear them crying. Can you practice what you preaching?
Well, Larry, certainly there have been so many awful incidents just within the last year. That is our show. Please visit our website. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Indonesian Ministry of Marine Affairs and Fisheries, MMAF, and the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, recently partnered to bring a team of seven experts from the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to provide training to Indonesian officials from the Ministry of Marine Affairs and Fisheries, Customs, Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and managers from the major Indonesian fishing ports in Manado on how to implement effective port state measures. This follows Indonesia's ratification of the 2009 Agreement on Port State Measures to prevent, deter, and eliminate illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. 31 countries, including Indonesia, as well as the European Union, have become party to the agreement, which entered into force globally on June 5, 2016. In 2015, MMAF estimated that annual losses from illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing cost Indonesia's economy approximately $20 billion each year. Port state measures entail conducting port inspections of fishing vessels that are suspected of being engaged in illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing in order to prevent their fish products from landing in ports. The training consists of both classroom and hands-on practice to stimulate boarding of vessels suspected of illegal activity. It also sets the stage for curriculum development and further training by the Indonesian government that will cascade these skills to all port officials working in Indonesia's five designated major fishing ports: Samudera Bungos in West Sumatra, Samudera Nisam Zakman in Jakarta, Samudera Bitung in North Sulawesi, Nusantara Ambon in Maluku, and Nusantara Pelabuhan Ratu in West Java. Through USAID, the United States contributes $39 million to help the Indonesian government protect and manage 7 million hectares of ocean and coastal resources. The United States is proud to support Indonesia's efforts to combat illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing, said Chargé d'Affaires Brian McPheeters. Illegal fishing steals billions of dollars worth of resources from Indonesia's waters each year, hurting those who play by the rules, including tens of thousands of Indonesians who support their families by fishing responsibly and legally. Illegal fishing also undermines efforts to conserve and manage shared fish stocks and threatens the sustainability of all fisheries.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.